All right, so last week we started this show with a little bit of Justin and Michigan State. This week we're going to switch it over and talk real quickly about the school that Russ and I support, the teams that we root for. And it's a quick little topic. It's a little fun starter to the show. But, Russ, I'm going to ask you first. Did John Beilein kind of make a mistake leaving the cushy, comfortable job that was U of M basketball for the NBA and the Cleveland Cavaliers?
So I'm kind of split on this. It's yes and no. No in the way that, hey, he's 67 now, and he's been a head coach at D1 college for 22 years. Like, shoot your shot, man. The NBA is the pinnacle. He could have just retired at that time. It would have been understandable. So I don't blame him for that. But, yeah, it's a big mistake going to Cleveland and thinking that's going to work out. When has anything worked out for Cleveland? Not with LeBron. Like, I was walking into a buzzsaw, and I really expected them to know better than that.
Well, yeah, but I also think about it from the fact of, look over at the other guys that have the so-called guaranteed life contracts. You have Izzo. You have Coach K. You mm-hmm. have Roy Williams. You have these guys that I think literally could tell the athletic department, I don't feel like coaching the rest of the year. I'm going to go on vacation, but I'll be back next year. And the team would probably go, okay, yeah, have a good one. See you when you get back. And Beilein was not necessarily in that echelon because Roy Williams, Tom Izzo, and Coach K are they're the greatest to ever do it. But Beilein was trending in a direction of he had Michigan right at the top of the Big Ten year in and year out. They were competing in tournaments. They made it to the national championship twice in like the last 5 or 6 years. They legitimately were at that point where you could start mentioning them with the Michigan States, the Dukes, the Kansases, all these teams, and you couldn't look at this guy and go, what are you smoking? It was legitimately fair to say they were a competitive team. They did it in their own brand of way. I've never seen so many people shoot three-pointers and us not have us. At one point, Zach Novak was 6'4 in our starting power forward. So that tells you the kind of ball we were playing. But if you're Beilein, Jay, you're kind of looking at this going, I mean, not that any coach wants to just sit back, put the feet up, but he had his ticket. He could have retired. U of M's winningest coach could have probably got a title if he had kept going the way he was. He was keeping him super competitive, and he was really giving Michigan State and Indiana and Ohio State a run there for their money in the Big Ten when it came to basketball.
Dude, he had a license to not necessarily kill, but coach for Michigan. Like, he could have just hung out and. I totally forgot about the age thing. I just was thinking he can, like, land another job in the NBA. Nah. He could have, like, rode into the sunset at Michigan, been the best coach there currently, and, you know, the people who are all pissy about football, they get to turn to basketball and see something great. I enjoy watching Michigan basketball, so it is kind of a mistake. He should have stayed, but, I mean, you're that old. I mean, you're bound to make mistakes, so maybe it was just a senior moment for him.
Yeah, and then real quick, and then we'll start everything up here. Ross, this is kind of a dick question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Depending on how this year and maybe next year goes for Juwan, is Juwan Howard someone that, kind of like Harbaugh, he was a great here, so we're not going to screw him over and fire him? Or does Beilein maybe go, I wouldn't mind coaching here again?
I think B could go, hey, I feel like coaching. They'd be like, well, you can park right here and shake some hands, and Juwan's still our coach. I think it's great that they're finally embracing the Fab Five again, and, man, that'd be a lot of bad blood to just suddenly go, you know what, I'm going to kick your ass out of the door, especially when he has so much pull with some of these top recruits. No, I think Beilein as a head coach at Michigan is done, but maybe not Beilein at Michigan being done.
The stats.
Considering today is Ash Wednesday, I can only assume the Lions gave up snacks for Lent.
The salt.
Apparently I'm going back to back on my own issues of being vertically challenged.
The sanity.
You could tell me it's coming. Still a very, very low percent chance I'm touching that.
And every so often, they talk about sports too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
All right. ahead. Another week, another episode. Tons to talk about. I could waste the time introing all of us, but you already know who we all are. I'm Eric Dorsch. That's Russ Ivanak. Russ, how we doing today?
I'm doing all right, despite, you know, all the snow. Looking like a Detroit Red Wings net, just absolutely covered over here.
Oh,
no hope in sight.
The giggles, Justin, Marcus, Justin, I got an easy question for you. How many snow angels are you going to have to make tonight with those two little kids?
Oh, God, don't remind me. I have a whole task list out to do outside when we get done here, so probably 30.
Jay's a betting man, though. I'm willing to bet. Jay, if I took the over-under and made the, if I put set the over at like 8, would I be good to bet on the over there?
I don't know. You can't make snow angels if you can't be found in your own home, so.
There you go. There you go. That's great how it is. Okay, cheating the system. I like it. That's a great move, great move. Speaking of cheating, we as a show relatively do a pretty fair job of, we just don't talk baseball. And it's not because we don't like the game of baseball. It's just that baseball is an everyday, it takes so much out of you that we could spend an entire episode just recapping the 7 days of baseball that happened while we weren't doing a show. So we touch on it from here to there. We make predictions at the start of the year. We come back to it when we need to. But over the last couple weeks, and it's been a little more than a couple weeks, but over the last couple weeks, it's progressively got bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's the scandal of the Houston Astros cheating when they won their World Series. And I tried my best to stay away from it. Like, let's talk about the other things. Everyone else covers it. But at this point now, it's just such a big thing. And so many big-name athletes, not just baseball players, even LeBron James took to Twitter on this to have something to say about it, that you just can't not have your say in it. So, Russ, I guess the fair question to ask, and I this could be a terrible question to ask too, but to me, when it's brought up, it's a question I ask to kind of try to lessen things a little bit, and that is the fact that cheating or not, and we all know that almost every team has some, in some way, tries to steal signs. Obviously, Houston did it to a much further extent, but at the end of the day, you still have to hit the ball. You still have to stop the other team from hitting the ball. So are people in the major leagues and sports in general, are they making this out to be a little bit more than it really is?
I'll say no.
Okay, that's fine.
A lot of, you know, my stat brethren actually took to this. In the World Series, Kershaw threw 51 off-speed pitches. Zero, exactly zero of them were swings and misses. He has around like a 40% swing and miss rate on his slider.
Yeah.
They took a sampling of all of his pitches,
mm-hmm,
and chunked them out into thousands, right? One, on average. One out of 1,000 samplings was there exactly zero swings and misses. That is such a minuscule, tiny percent chance of this event occurring that it is almost negligible. It is more likely that I'll be struck by lightning, fall down, and then struck by lightning again in something like this. And that's exactly plays your point, that you still have to hit the ball. But, well, we're seeing this is a palpable thing where it is changing the ability to hit the ball.
Mm, yeah.
And that's a profound level of cheating that, I mean, we can talk about Bountygate and Spygate. They're similar, but not in-game like this where it directly affected the outcome in a way that can be measured fairly easily. It's shocking. And no, I hope they rake them over the coals forever.
So what you're saying, and not to make light of this in any way, but we're going to get serious about it, what you're saying, yep, is if they hadn't cheated and they hadn't done this, when it came to Kershaw, we would have saw a lot more of...
Strike three, hero!
We would have saw a lot more than that. Is that what you're... That's what
very
you're
likely.
Okay.
Very likely. Very likely.
Just
yeah,
checking.
You can't guarantee it, obviously, but yeah, probably.
Well, and we do this with all sports. We don't relegate him just to hockey. He you know, I'm going to pay Justin a compliment. If you listen to the show, I don't do it very often. Justin is knowledgeable when it comes to almost all sports. Basketball, we're working on him. We're trying to get him there. But, Jay, I'm asking you to put your commissioner hat on here. I'm asking you, you're the commissioner of the fantasy leagues, so you know you're the armchair sports talk commissioner too. If you're the commissioner, you saw everything, you've gotten all the information you can get out of it, you have the input of other players, of teams, of the outside world almost, how much pressure is on you to give them the max that's absolutely possible? And if so, what is that max? Because I personally do not believe vacating titles makes any sense. It just doesn't. Like, you hear people losing Heismans and losing national championships, but it's like, well, yes, did they do something wrong? Absolutely. But at the same time, so what, we're just going to say that we never had a 2017 World Series champion, or we never had a 2005 Heisman Trophy winner? It makes no sense, because that person still did things on the field, or team did things on the field to earn it. They just maybe didn't do it in the greatest way possible.
I don't think they earned it.
Okay, and that's fine. I'm not trying to disagree with you. Listen, I think we're all on the page of this was wrong. We're all on the page of this was wrong. But unfortunately, we could have a 10-minute conversation about all of us agreeing how wrong it was, or I can at least try to shed the other side to maybe keep the conversation. Did they cheat? Absolutely. Did they absolutely cheat? 100%. But at the same time, so what are we saying? There's no 2017 World Series champion?
I'm okay with that.
Okay, that's fine. But all right, so Jay, we'll take away that side of it. But if you're the commissioner, if you're the guy that calls the shots here, what's the penalty that you give this team that you feel is fair, that you feel is just, so that everyone can feel like they got theirs for what they did?
Well, as the commissioner of the MLB, you know, the trophy is just a piece of tin. The rule book is just a collection of paper and staples. So
okay.
No, I'm being joking, because that's what their fucking stupid commissioner said about taking the title away from them, that it was just a piece of tin. The rule book's a rule book. I had to drive 25 miles an hour to get home today because of the snow. Those are rules when it snows. I know they have thrown everything monetarily at the organization, but there shouldn't be a champion from last season. There should be more. If you're going to just promote cheating, the MLB is no different than, like, dating apps and catfishing. There's no rules. You can do whatever the fuck you want. You can pretend to be who you want. You can cheat. You can make things up. I absolutely am turned off to the sport of baseball because there's no rules and because nothing of value has happened. I hope every team lines up and just hits every batter that comes up to the plate for the Astros. And that's how people are going to take it into their own hands to get revenge against it, because the league's not doing shit. And when your commissioner's coming out and saying, oh, it's just a piece of tin, the rule book's just paper. That's what he's basically doing by doing nothing. So if I'm the commissioner, I'm doing everything I can. I don't know, take draft picks away, bench players, suspend the main people who are involved. Don't let them sell beer at the park. I don't care. Something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like the statement he's making is definitely to try to downplay everything so it doesn't become anarchy. But the problem is, enough people know about this and enough people have put their thoughts into it or their opinions into it, that it is a thing now. No matter what you do, you're not going to escape going, well, we gave them the slap on the wrist and we told them, don't you dare do it again. Like, this is a time that they have to do something. They really do. And I mean, Russ, you over the last couple of minutes, you've given me your opinion on how you feel about this. But I guess if I asked you, like, listen, we fired Jay. He wasn't a good commissioner. He called the trophy a piece of tin. We got a new commissioner now and it's you. What are you doing? First act is have to dealing with the Houston Astros. What are you doing that you feel is a just thing, where you're not necessarily giving them a death sentence of you're never going to be competitive in this league again, but you're going to learn that if you try this again, we're going to make sure you're never competitive in this league again.
Right. So I actually kind of went through this exercise earlier, because I looked at what the penalties were, and so far, say the GM and the manager got suspended for a year. Club mm-hmm. was fined $5 million, which is nothing to a baseball
absolutely
team.
Absolutely nothing.
And then they lost their first and second round picks for the next 2 years.
Okay.
So that's our baseline. We know that's already in there. So I looked at, hey, what are some recent scandals that were close to this? Kind of get a baseline. Bountygate, right? D coordinator and Sean Payton, head coach, both get suspended for a year. So, hey, that's similar.
Yep.
Four players suspended for a year, and there was some light fines. So, all right, less. Trying to injure guys, probably a more heinous moral thing than cheating in game, but doesn't directly impact the game, break the spirit of the game as much. Spygate, Bill Belichick gets $500,000 fine. Pats get $250,000 fine. They lose one draft pick. I'd argue one draft pick in NFL worth probably about the four picks in the MLB. It's just so much more valuable for them.
Absolutely.
And that's that's probably the closest comparison to that offense, but it still wasn't an in-game thing. Yes, they taped him. Yes, it gave them an unfair advantage, but at the same time, it wasn't in-game like this was. It still was an amount of preparation that had to be done. So I think you got to go above Spygate. So we've seen the suspension, we've seen the fines, we've seen the draft picks. So if you want to go one further, I think it's you vacate the title. And if the Pats had not lost the Super Bowl to the Giants, maybe that's a different case too. Probably less so, because again, it wasn't in game. But yeah, I would take the penalties that have been levied and take away their title. You can't. I don't think you can give it to anyone else. You can't guarantee the other team would have won, but you can sure as shit be able to say, you don't get to fly that banner anymore. Because I mentioned the Fab Five earlier. Part of the reason we know them is because of the shame it brought on. So scorched earth is just fine with me.
Yeah, no, I get it, and believe me, I'm not a proponent of, oh, what they did wasn't as bad as everybody's making it out to be. It was bad. It's absolutely bad. To me, the loss of the two first and second round picks, yeah, that's something, but in my opinion, it doesn't really hit them that hard because, one,
no.
You've got a farm system that is full of these guys. Trades nowadays will guarantee you could almost trade someone in your farm system for someone that was a first round pick a year or two ago. You already have a great team. Your team is good whether they're cheating or not. We can probably make a conversation that Astros team, head to toe, has a very solid starting lineup. Very nice. Jose Altuve, I say pound for pound, but he's about half the weight of everybody else in the league, is still one of the best hitters in baseball. This guy is a great baseball player. So the picks don't really hit me in that way because, like you said, like NFL, one of those seven picks, that is a you can't afford to lose kind of thing. Like you need,
and it's an immediate impact.
It's an immediate impact. Whereas baseball, even if the Houston Astros had like the 15th pick in the first round, that's great. Very unlikely that guy is going to be stepping into a major league uniform year one and being an immediate impact player. Not saying it won't happen, but you're probably going to be a farm system guy. It's a lot like hockey where a lot of these guys are going to sit in the minors for a year or two. So by the time those picks go around, the guys you drafted in 17 are already ready to play. So the picks to me are just kind of, it's a way of making it look like we hurt you, but in reality we didn't hurt you. If you were a team that could only
head on there.
Like basketball, you can only carry 15 guys on a roster. That's all you get. So baseball has 40 guys on a roster, and then, oh, by the way, they've got another 900 in the farm system that they can mess with. So it doesn't hit you anywhere near as hard. It really doesn't. I agree with Jay on suspensions. You absolutely, some of these guys need to sit out. And I don't know how possible this is. I'm not a GM. I don't know what it is. You're going to suspend these guys? I think you should suspend them without pay. Take the money away from them. They don't get money. Because that's the thing. It's going to hurt them a lot more to spend a year without that big-ass contract they had than a year of them just sitting there going, oh, wow, you're telling me I get a year off and I can just relax and I'm still going to make $20 million this year? Okay, yeah, sure. No worries. I'm good. If you're the commissioner, you look at these guys and go, hey, Jose, you know that big contract you have? You get one less year of it, and we're not going to pay you for the entire time you're sitting there. Hope you were smart last year with all that cash. So that's I think there's a way to do it. But, again, trying to pick the opposing side here, the title thing makes no sense to me. It really doesn't because you kind of said it yourself, Russ. There's no way to guarantee the other team would have won it. So in a way, you got to say there's no way to guarantee that while the cheating obviously helped, it really did. There's no way to say that Houston doesn't still win the World Series. The signal thing helped. You, like I said before, you still have to hit the ball more times than they did. You still have to stop them from it. You need to play a complete game of baseball. Stealing the signals helps a little bit. Doesn't change the fact that you still have to make contact with that ball. And I know for a fact that Justin Verlander's 12-6 curveball or Chapman's 105-mile-an-hour fastball, you could tell me it's coming. Still a very, very low percent chance I'm touching that.
Kershaw, though, 51 times he did, and they always hit it. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
But Kershaw's only one guy that pitched. You still got to win other games. Yeah, they had a great run on Kershaw. They had a great run on Kershaw, and that's fine.
High-end, that's the high-end example because Kershaw's freaking good.
Yeah. It's weird to me. Like, I understand, and I should be able to wrap my head more around the fact that this is such a big deal. But for me, I still kind of look at it in the light of it's one part of it. So therefore, I feel like stripping them of a title, it doesn't do anything, because like you said, now you're looking at, when you look back at those record books, you've got 2017, there is no World Series champion, and then you got to explain, well, why didn't they win a World Series? Like, why is there no World Series there? And, oh, well, this team cheated, mm-hmm. and it's a weird gap. It's a weird gap that doesn't make sense to me.
That's how you deter it from happening again, because you will always have to remember it. Mm-hmm. It will always get brought up.
Yeah, but in a way, and these are two different things, believe me, they're two very different things. In a way, it's kind of like if you look back at the Heisman record book, and there's no Heisman the year that Reggie Bush won it, because mm-hmm. Reggie's family was getting paid. Now, I understand that's wrong. That violates the NCAA. But someone needed, and I needed someone a long time ago to explain this to me, and maybe one of you two can. Someone needs to explain to me why Reggie's mom driving a Hummer that USC paid for changes what Reggie Bush did on the field at USC. It has nothing to do with the effect of his playing ability. Unless that Hummer drove him into the end zone one time.
Well, I mean, he did push Matt Leinart in that one time.
Well, that's
great.
You're
kind of using the carpool lane.
I see
so
what
maybe.
You're talking about. But you know what I mean? Like, there are two different things.
You're exactly right. It doesn't. And we're willing to take that away from him. But something much more heinous, we're not going to take a title away.
Well, but I'm saying I don't get why you even took a title away there. That's what it's...
Oh, yeah. It's
rough.
Paying college players, that's a whole different topic.
And we've touched on it before, and Lord knows we'll probably touch on it again along the way. Believe me, it's not a dead subject.
Can I offer one thing?
Sure.
What if we forced the Astros
to
have to go play the Dallas Renegades and the Dallas Stars and the Cowboys, and they just have to go play all of their same state teams and get the shit kicked out of them so the rest of the respectable teams in the country or the state can just put them on the line? We should make them go play another sport.
And we just blast Knock on Wood the entire time.
Yes. They're screwed.
3.5 hours of getting beat up playing football. Because knocking on wood's for good luck, not for curveballs. And now you must pay.
Jamie Benn is going to take them to Pound Town.
Why are you the way that you are?
Can't tell you yet.
So glad we have an editing capability when it comes to this. It's an idea. It's a fun idea. It definitely is. I don't know. If you've been listening for the last 10, 15 minutes, you've probably come to the conclusion that we're probably not going to all agree on this. And again, like I said, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. I agree that things need to be done that haven't been done yet to punish this team for what they did. I just think the big golden ticket one of the take away the title, to me, doesn't fully make sense. But at the same time, if you take their title, nothing I can do about it. I'm not a Houston Astros fan. I'm a fan of a team that is never going to win a World Series ever again. And the last time they did win one, I was 4 years away from being born. So it could be a lot worse, Houston. I'm just telling you. It could be a lot worse.
Ugh. Don't bring up the Tigers, huh?
Yeah, well, it's the only time we're going to talk about them in 2020, so I might as well. It's rough. It's rough. But like I said, we don't touch on baseball that often, and so any chance we can get to at least try to make them feel included, we definitely want to. Moving over now, we'll circle back in. Let's get back to Detroit. We've got a lot of things happening in Detroit right now that we want to touch on. Obviously, NHL trade deadline was Monday. A couple moves were made. We're going to get to those here in a few minutes. I'm going to do what I find myself doing a lot more often, and I don't know why I'm doing it, but I guess I'll keep doing it because it's working. I'm going to hand the microphone over to Russ and let him give us everything, and we'll hear Jay's comments on it. But first, guys, last week we talked about Matt Stafford and Darius Slay both kind of being on the trade block when it came to Detroit, that they were potentially looking to move them. A lot of speculation that Tua Tagovailoa is going to be the Lions' third overall pick, whether that happens or not. So I want to kind of update on that and talk about that. But, Russ, the biggest one I feel like right now is the fact that last week the Detroit Lions decided to cut defensive tackle Snacks Harrison after, say, a year and a half on the team. And after last year when we gave him a little bit more money, and obviously, Snacks didn't have the greatest of years this past year, but if you're looking to improve that defense. I need someone to explain to me why you're getting rid of one of the, literally one of the centerpieces of that defense. He's right in the center. He's right in the middle there.
Quite literally, yes.
Quite literally, he's the middle of the defense. So makes sense to you? Not make sense to you? Kind of maybe see where they're going. If you can figure out Bob Quinn, I'd love it.
I think I have figured it out, actually.
Okay.
Considering today is Ash Wednesday, I can only assume the Lions gave up snacks for Lent. That's all I've got.
Oh, my God.
Yes. that is the best logic I have. I mean, yes, he frees up $6.7 million in cap space, but they have upwards of $40 million of it. They weren't cash-strapped. So unless they're planning a huge free agent move, and yeah, the last 2 years, Quinn has gone out, and he's paid big early, one of them being like Rick Wagner, who has kind of flopped. So, which reminds us, free agency isn't always the best way to acquire talent, especially when you pay through the nose for it. So you're freeing up space by creating another problem on a defensive line that already needed to be addressed for $6.7 million that might get you, I don't know. I can only hope they throw it at part of the extension for Slay. That's my best hope. That cap space, I guess, is the only thing. He's a 32-year-old run stuffer that probably had a couple more years left, but I don't know. It seems to me it's creating more problems on the D-line.
All right. Gave up snacks for Lent.
That is just excellent, by the way, buddy.
It was great. I can't be upset with you. That take brought to you by
America's most average engineer.
But the greatest stat man. You're really still the greatest stat man.
Oh, thank you.
I didn't see that coming. I'm not going to lie. I had my mic off when Russ said that so I could take a sip of water. And if it wasn't for me just really being able to hold it together, I would have spit water all over all the electronical equipment in this studio. No, that was a good one. I liked it a lot. Listen, I personally have another theory, and that's that Detroit Lions don't like good defensive tackles for some reason. We have an allergic reaction to them. Listen, over the last, as far back as I can go, which is about 2000, we have had, and again, this guy kind of dropped off quick once he dropped off, but we had Sean Rogers, who was just an absolute battering ram in the middle. Then you had this guy
who never gave up snacks.
Never gave up snacks, but he also was a good player while we had him. Then we had Ndamukong Suh, who, like him or hate him, he had his controversial moments. He still produced. I mean, granted, he only played 7 games out of the year because he was busy ripping Marion Barber's dreadlocks out of his head or killing Jay Cutler with his forearm. But when he played, he produced. Now you have this guy, Snacks, who we get in a trade, not last season, but the season prior, midway through. Seems like a great thing. We have all the off-season stuff of, does Snacks want more money? Oh, no, we really just, he's just sitting out to sit out, but we're going to give him some more money and this and that. He has a, I don't want to say mediocre year because that's not fair to do to the guy, especially when you're a guy that only plays 2, maybe 3 downs. He's not really an on-the-field the entire time kind of guy, but he at least was something to build around. You can get all the other pieces established, and then you, if the time has come that we need to move on from him, we that's the only thing we have to fill, as opposed to now you have all those other pieces to fill, but guess what? Now we have this one to deal with, too. You kind of, to me, you created more space. I get the money, but you created more to do than you had to. It just seems like taking a mondo step backwards to maybe think you're going forwards. And it just, I don't get it a lot. Obviously, the money for Slay, and we're going to talk about Slay here in a second. The money for Slay is great, but the issue with that is if the money is for Slay, you need to make sure that Slay still wants to be here. It does you no good to have all that money for Slay if Slay doesn't want to be in Detroit anymore. You know, it's there's nothing they're going to be able to do about that. So, but Jay, it's the same thing. Talking with, you know, Russ kind of said it great, but anything to add on to that? Like, if you are, you know, again, you're our GM. If you're the GM of the Lions, what's the logical thinking in getting rid of a guy who's probably one of your best players on defense? He's not an every down guy. I get that. So there's the knock. But he's at least someone who's going to be a quality run stopper for you, which is something this team has desperately needed over the last decade.
I mean, the only thing I can add to that all is that if I'm Bob Quinn, I better be banking on myself to hit on free agency, hit on draft picks, and fix another hole that he just created for himself, which, newsflash, he hasn't done any of that in the past. He literally has to bank on everything. And in particular, if we lose Slay, great, now we're fixing things on the front end and the back end of our worst defense that we had last year. Like, he has to be damn near perfect in something that is revolved around luck. So I don't know. If I was him, I would have done anything to keep him just to hope to have a better chance of being better than you were last year. Like, he has got to be perfect. It's something that not a lot of people can be. Like, people get paid millions of dollars probably to be expert analysis for the draft stuff, and they don't even get it right. So, RIP your career, bro. Good job.
Listen, I agree with you, Jay, and it's a crazy one. But Jay is always having these big, bold predictions that we hope come true. You know, he predicted Eiserman coming back. We got it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you one. I'm going to give you a big, bold prediction, and it's probably never going to come true, but it's at least going to put some hope into our lives. Here it is. Bob Quinn had some conversations with some other GMs, got some opinions, got some thoughts, realized, you know what? We need to get rid of Snacks because he's someone that we maybe can't afford to expend because Chase Baby Hand Burrows is going to go number one. Guy's got some tiny digits, but he's still going to be okay. Then you know what it is? The Redskins, they're not okay with Dwayne Haskins. Ron Rivera doesn't want Dwayne Haskins. So Ron Rivera is going to pull the big upset, and he's going to draft Tua number two, and we're going to get Chase Young. That's what it is. He knows that we're going to already get a big defensive lineman. We might as well make the space while we can because we're going to have to give Chase a lot of money to be here. We're really going to. So that's what it is. Big bold prediction. Tua Tagovailoa is going number two to the Washington Redskins. Chase Young going to fall perfectly into our laps. Another year of Matt Stafford. That's what it is.
That's dangerous. That's dangerous. Don't install hope in the damn city.
Well, come on. We all know that Joe Burrows has baby hands, so that's okay. That's not preposterous in my assumption.
Confirmed.
By the way, did the measuring the other day. I have the same size hand as Joe Burrows. Where is my call, Cincinnati? Seriously, where is my call?
I mean, how much Skyline chili do you really want to eat?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to live in Ohio. I'll admit that, but maybe they'll let me commute. I don't know. Listen,
you just really like the Red Rocket, don't you?
If Philip Rivers can drive all the way from San Diego to L.A. every day for practice, I can drive to Cincinnati or fly to Cincinnati. I'm going to be the first overall pick. I will get a private jet to get me to Cincinnati every day. That's not a big deal. I mean, look, Baker Mayfield rented a Winnebago. I can work something out. We're all right. But no, I don't want to play in Cincinnati. But no, I honestly believe this. If you listen and read the things, Ron Rivera will not give a straight answer on Dwayne Haskins. Now, that could just be him making people think, ooh, are they gonna, you know, give up on Dwayne Haskins after a year? But at the same time, name a coach, because it's the same thing happening in Carolina where Matt Rhule will not say anything on Cam other than we'd love to have him here, but they won't commit to why he's not getting an extension. Most of these first-year coaches, they want their own guys. They don't want to come in and inherit things. And for all you know, Ron Rivera had no interest in Dwayne Haskins when he was in Carolina, so why would he want him in Washington? So it's a far-fetched thing.
We just saw it with Arizona, too.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's far-fetched. Don't get me wrong, because I think we can all agree. None of us are Ohio State fans, but I also think if all of us had the second or third pick in the draft, probably the second, neither of us are passing. None of us are passing on Chase Young. This guy is a new generation kind of talent.
So tell real quickly, though. Say that plays out and the Lions are sitting there at three and Chase Young is like, oh, damn, I'm going to Detroit. How nuclear are you going to go if the Lions are like, yeah, we're going to trade back and get some more capital, and this is just the best thing to trade back about 5-6 we'll let someone else take it.
Listen, this is 2 years of us doing this together. Our minds are starting to meld a little bit. I was just about to ask that question of, if you are the Lions, do you honestly field the phone calls and say, all right, we got three, someone here wants Chase? But see, the only way I go nuclear, Jay, is if that trade doesn't have at least one first round pick this year, but I would rather have two. We know the team that's capable of giving us that, but it has to have more than one first-round pick in it, and it's got to have a couple other things, including depending on the team, a piece that fills a need for us. You want him. You know what he's going to be. Everyone scout him as such. Now, obviously, we've seen guys get scouted as the second coming, and they don't make it more than 3 years in the league. But you want it. The price tag on this is definitely going to read Detroit won the trade, whether it is Chase Young you're getting or not. The Detroit won the trade. If I'm Bob Quinn, I don't because that's the thing. What do you have to lose? Say no one makes that offer that you want. Okay, I'm going to take Chase Young. I'm okay with that. I'm not going to cry about that. But if you want to tell me, oh, I'll give you this year's first-round pick, this year's third-round pick, next year's first-round pick, and then on top of a linebacker or a safety or a, you know, right tackle or something that's going to that's going to perfectly fit our needs, I would field the phone calls. And I don't think I'd be too upset about it, Russ.
I mean, I guess you always got to listen because maybe you get the Herschel Walker deal, right, or the RG3 deal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another one of those things that, like, it's certainty. It's cost certainty, right, one way or the other. But the nice thing about Chase Young, and we talked about cutting snacks for money, is you get him then for 5 years on a rookie deal. Being mad, if he's even half of what he's expected to be, he's going to be underpaid for that entire contract.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of value in that. So, yeah, even if you get two firsts and something that would be comparable to what you would get out of Chase Young, you're going to have to pay through the nose for what you're getting from Chase Young. So that's fewer spots you get to fill in other places, too. So that might be a starting point for me for where I'd have that negotiation. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I guess you always have to listen because there's 32 GMs out there and not everyone's making good decisions.
Well, here, let me put it in perspective. Let me put it another way. Like I said, hockey for me this year, I've been off the radar on it. Not the Red Wings aren't that good, so I'm losing it. Is there a guy who right now, if the draft happened tomorrow, is there a guy who's consensus number one that we already know is going to be? Who is it?
Alexi mm-hmm. Lafreniere.
Say that name mm-hmm. again. Someone just walked in while you were saying that.
Alexi Lafreniere.
Little French kid. Okay. So the first name's Alexi. First name's Alexi.
Yeah.
That's good. It's good enough for me.
Yeah,
okay.
Or Alex. Either way.
No. All right. That's fine. Alex. So, Jay, say the Red Wings get the third pick. All right. First two teams, for some strange reason, they balk on him. He's sitting there. You're telling me, as the Red Wings, you don't listen to every call that comes in on this guy on the off chance someone offers you the King's ransom you're looking for?
I mean, we could use a winger.
I get the filling the need part of it. I really do, because we can make the argument that Chase Young definitely fills a need. But at the same time, Chase Young also jumps into a core where on paper we've got quite a bit of and we don't utilize anyway. But again, he's someone that you can use at multiple places, so I get that. That's why I'm saying, if you're a GM, I feel like no phone call is not one you take. You have to at least hear it out, because to find out you took this person and in reality you could have just bettered your team for the next 3 years in a row on top of whatever you get in the draft, I feel like that call has to be made.
Yeah, I mean, I just, if I'm the Lions and I'm in that spot, I have to look in the mirror and remember that I'm the Lions and not probably answer a single damn phone call. Like, just grab a certainty that we can have one, because our certainty with Stafford is running out of time, and I would want that next piece. I mean, I understand the logistics of listening to other people, but, like, for the sake of our fandom, just take Chase Young and get to the second round and just close your eyes.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Again, that's the difference of perspectives. I'm not saying don't draft Chase Young. Believe me, anyone in Detroit, you are not hearing me say don't take Chase Young if you can get Chase Young. What I'm saying is make sure that you're not going to set your team up for some immediate success in the next couple of years. And if you're Bob Quinn, that's the and it kind of is the Bob Quinn thing, because Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia are on the win now part of their deals. If you don't win this year, you're not going to be here next year. So looking towards the future doesn't necessarily benefit you as much as immediate impact. I get that. But if you're a Lions fan, being able to set yourself up down the road for more chances to improve, to me, looks really good. But at the same time, mm-hmm. so does freaking Chase Young. So I'm not going to argue.
Chase Young might fit both of those things.
It's Exactly. I may have just been talking about Chase Young the entire time, and no one realized it.
There you go.
Well, let's stay with the draft, because, I mean, obviously we want to talk about Slay, but the other part where the draft kind of comes into play is the conversation that Tua is actually the, you know, the third pick is going to go to Tua. We're gonna sign him. We're going to draft him. He's going to be our backup and player of the future. And we had the conversation last week on how we feel about that. Obviously, Bob Quinn has come out and saying, and again, he has to do this because, you know, he's the GM, doesn't want to stir the pot. But from everything you've heard out of Bob Quinn at the Combine so far this week, he's all about Matt Stafford. He wants Matt Stafford to be in a Lions jersey next year. He expects him to be. He's fully ready to go. He's ready to play. Now, again, we've seen it in the past where GMs say nothing but great things about a player, and two days later, that player is no longer on that team. But we have to take everything for what we see it as until we see it otherwise. But, Jay, I mean, it's kind of re-upping the conversation, and it's kind of just adding a little bit to it. Bob Quinn sounds like he's confident with Stafford. Stafford, for all intents and purposes, sounds like he still wants to play for the Detroit Lions. He wants to be that quarterback that takes us where we, you know, to the top of the mountain, if we can ever get there. But if you're the Lions, you've got a quarterback who, for a couple years there, really was an Iron Man, and over the last couple years, he has been a little injury prone. Obviously, he's taken a lot of hits. If you're the Lions, do you still say, okay, Matt, you're here, you're our quarterback, we're still going to take the guy of the future just in case?
I would just be saying he's technically on our roster. Stafford doesn't need to have his ego stroked. And I get it, we're going to probably start him off against week one, regardless if we get Tua or not. But, like, I just wouldn't be talking about Stafford right now. Like, I know what I've got in the cabinet. Cool. I've got an old bottle of liquor that tastes good sometimes, is surrounded by other shitty bottles, and is about to break. Cool. Like, I don't need my GM talking about Matt Stafford. I need him trying to figure out what's best for the Lions at three, and it's most likely going to be another quarterback. And if that makes him uncomfortable, where he's got to, you know, stroke Stafford's ego, then yeah, it is win now because he's about to leave soon. So I don't talk about Matt Stafford. I don't want to talk about him until I have to.
Okay, all right, that's fine. Russ, Jay doesn't want to talk about Matt Stafford, so I'll talk to you about Matt Stafford. Same thing, though. I mean, you got a quarterback who has proven when he's got the pieces around him, the system set up for him, he can be competitive. He can make this team a team that can at least keep themselves in the hunt, albeit on one side of the ball. He can't control the defensive side. All he can do is try to keep the defense off the field. On the other side, you have a guy who, coming off injury, had one big game at Alabama and then was a competitive starter on a team that I think could probably win 8 games in the NFL right now if they had to, just being Alabama. So if you're the GM, are you you're looking at Matt Stafford and saying, listen, Matt, you're the starting quarterback next year. We're not even going to let Tua think he's going to step on the field, but we're still going to take that guy because if you go down again this year, we want to make sure that we have the next option that we plan to have for years to come.
I mean, so looking across, you know, Lake Michigan here at Green Bay, that's kind of what they did with Favre and Rodgers, right?
Yep.
Like, it stings. And I think it's unlikely because, to the point you made earlier, Quinn and Patricia are in very much a prove-it year and a use-it-or-lose-it kind of deal here.
Yep.
And giving up such a premium asset to have a guy that's not going to see the field this year is a problem. But if you're sure, if you're dead sure that Tua is a stud, is going to be an all-star, is going to be a Pro Bowler, top 5, top 10 quarterback in the league, it almost makes sense to do it. But I don't trust that they're going to be able to adequately fill the other holes on this roster to do it. So could they do it? And yeah, and honestly, that kind of seems like the only way we can connect Bob Quinn's dots and not make him a liar. That he's selling us on Stafford. Stafford's our quarterback. Well, that can be the case if Tua just doesn't play this year or maybe next year or maybe even the year after that. That's it's a little bit scary after watching this team win 3 games. But I guess, to your point, if Stafford goes down again, they probably don't win only 3 games if they had Tua.
Yeah. Well, I would like to say I personally don't think you draft a quarterback with a third pick, and he does. You don't put him on a track to at least be on that field within 2 years. I just don't see drafting. Right? I don't see taking a guy with a third overall pick and then saying, "Well, by the way, you're probably not going to play until like 2024." But we just wanted to have you. It doesn't make sense to me. But you also mentioned something kind of funny, and it takes us a bit off topic, but it keeps us in the division, and it kind of made me laugh today. You mentioned the whole Favre and Rodgers thing. That's what they did.
Yep.
Obviously, Rodgers sat a little bit more than, you know, 1 year. Favre was there for a couple of years.
Oh, yeah.
And then Rodgers got his shot. But Rodgers also wasn't the third overall pick. It sounds like Green Bay is reaching back into their, you know, bag of plays, and they're going to do the same thing again to Rodgers. As of right now, Green Bay is projected to take Jacob Eason, the quarterback out of Washington, with their first-round pick. So, sounds like Rodgers is about to have done to him what he did to Brett Favre, and I just couldn't be more happy about it. I just cannot wait to see this man be so upset that they brought his replacement in right in front of him. Now, I don't know why on earth it would be Jacob Eason, but that's for each to decide.
No, I'm thrilled for the prospect of whatever deep Southern aesthetic you can adopt from Brett Favre and his Wrangler jeans and Aaron Rodgers and that awful Tom Selleck-looking mustache. Like, I don't know, maybe this guy's super into overalls or something.
Yeah.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah. By the way, don't ever be mean to Tom Selleck like that again. That was an offensive statement to Tom Selleck's mustache.
I should not put Tom Selleck and Aaron Rodgers, I don't know, lip rat in the same conversation.
That's not bad.
So much hate for this man. I think he's a beauty.
I'm just going to have to disagree with you there, Jay.
I just don't. I think it's going to be hilarious. I really do. I think it's going to be hilarious if it does happen. But again, if you're Green Bay, you're basically saying, "Hey, Aaron, love you, man. You're great. We're ready. We're going to get this guy in here. We expect you to help him get where he needs to be because we're looking at the plan that doesn't have you in a Green Bay jersey much longer." So it's very interesting to see, and it's just kind of weird because since we've kind of been old enough to really follow the game and pay attention to it, it's weird to see the guy that we remember him being the guy that was going to replace the great. Now the great is going to get replaced by another guy. It just shows you how quickly it comes full circle. So it's just interesting to see. All right, Jay, you didn't want to talk about Stafford. Do you maybe want to talk about Darius Slay?
Always.
Okay, good. Let's talk about Darius Slay. Obviously, we talked about Snacks being released as maybe a chance to get Slay that money. We've heard things from Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia that say, listen, we want Darius on this team, but we're also not going to risk Darius not wanting to be on this team. So we're going to field the calls. We're going to talk to people. I sent it to you guys last night because it was a question I wanted to make sure that I asked. And so, Jay, you've had plenty of time to prepare, so I'm hoping you already have the answer. If you're the Detroit Lions, what is the deadline, whether it's the draft, training camp, first week, what is the deadline that you got to put with yourself that says we have to move him by now, or we're not moving him at all until the end of the year, or we're not worrying about him again until the end of the year, and what's the price tag on Darius Slay for you to be okay making that deal?
So I'll talk about the money real quick.
Okay.
I don't care what it costs to keep him.
Okay.
Because I would wait, I'd do the draft, and then I'd pay that man his money right after the draft. I think it'd be only responsible that if we jump into Tua, right, that's a sign of we're going to make a turn in terms of who they are as a team. But if we get fortunate to get Chase Young, I would pay Slay, try to free up the defensive side of the ball as much as possible, and make that better because the offense was at least a good product last year. So if we're going to go all in on D, wait till after the draft, see if that happens. I don't care. Just pay Slay. We don't need another hole. Like, let's not expose ourselves on every side of defense, right?
Listen, Jay, you've said it. You've said it enough that we have to do it. Justin is all for
pay that man his money.
He's all for it, and I like it.
Yes. Pay him. Just do one thing. Pay him. Put that off your to-do list and focus on other problems. Don't make more work for yourself, damn it.
Okay, now, you're all for that, but I asked the question in another way. So are you saying you're not trading him. There's no number they can be offered to you that puts number 23 out the door.
Of course there's offers, but I mean, I don't think we're at a position where we can be like, oh, we need to get as much as we can, see his value and give us more so we feel like we won. How about let's have some nice things first, and then we can start doing that in the future.
But the reason I say that is Slay has been outspoken in saying that in his next contract, he wants top five corner money. So in order for him to get that, we either have to pay him top five corner money, which I think is going to be tough, or whoever gets him knows they have to pay top five corner money, so they're not going to risk trading for him and then losing him in a year. You're like, we need to get something out of this guy. It's kind of like Drummond, where we dropped the ball on getting what we needed to out of Drummond. We need to get that out of Slay. This team can't afford to lose Slay and not get enough of a return to at least be able to help themselves down the road.
Fair comparison. I would just point out that Slay is obviously a much better athlete.
Well, absolutely.
You know what you're going to get out of him. Just pay him. Like, can we just write him a check and move on? Like, sell some more hot dogs. I don't care.
Okay.
Russ can probably weigh in much better on the financial responsibility I'm clearly throwing out the window.
Yeah.
But, just pay the man.
All right, but that's fine. You're not about trading him, and that's totally fine.
No.
That's part of the question, and, that's why I asked it. Russ, same question to you. I mean, what's the deadline? If you're going to – let me put it this way. Jay already gave us one side of it, so I'm going to put you more to task. You've got to trade Darius Slay. There's no money to it. That was Jay's side of it, putting you to task here. You have to trade Darius Slay. What's the deadline if you're Bob Quinn that you're saying he needs to be moved by now or he's playing on this team until the end of December? And B, what's that number that you have to see on that offer sheet that you go, all right, deal?
Going to make me take the side I don't want to take, but all right.
I'll take the side if you want. I'm giving you a chance.
I've got something here, so I'll run with it. I will say just quickly to Jay's point, he's making them about 13.5 right now. He said that he wants at least 16 to put him up there.
Yep.
You cleared 6.5 off from snacks, right? There is money there. You can pay him 17, do it short term, get it done. Anyways, other side. We just saw Jalen Ramsey get traded, right? Younger, yep, on his rookie deal, so he was cheaper too. But going to cost more to re-sign because of his age. He went for 2 first-round picks and a 4th round pick. So we have our precedent. That's where I'm starting. There is a sense of Slay at his age, at his performance. This is the highest point to trade him, right? He's got 1 year left, so you can trade him to, like, the Rams, who are rumored to be after him and are ready for a Super Bowl run right now, and they can maximize that window, and you can probably get a good return out of them. I guess fitting the whole Ramsey comparison there and the Rams.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, if I don't see 2 good first-round picks, I'm walking away. That's really where it's got to start because, yeah, they might be able to, even if they stay at 3 or trade back to 5, they can get Okuda, right? And, yep, and he could be anything. He could even be a Darius Slay. That'd be great. But you need something like that. You need an asset of that caliber. And I know Slay was a second-round pick, but second-round corners don't turn into Darius Slay very often.
Nope.
I'm looking at a team that's at the fringe, and I can get a couple mid-round first picks from them. Or I don't even know, hey, if the Chargers find a way to sweet-talk Tom Brady and they decide, hey, we're in for it, try and grab that first-round pick. That'd be interesting. But no, it's the draft for me. That's the deadline. It lets you optimize your draft class. Free agency starts a little bit before that, so you should know what you're doing anyways. But this is opening up another hole on the defense, another question mark. And if you don't have a full draft class to address it, you're not as prepared as you should be.
Okay. You made a comment about Jalen Ramsey and with what he did, or with what he was traded for, kind of sets the precedent of where we need to be. I have 2 questions on that. One, you said you need to see at least 2 first round picks. I'm assuming you're saying in the way of you need at least a first rounder this year and a first rounder next year. Or are you saying you need 2 first round picks in this 2020 draft?
Just 2. If there's a good package we can get for this year, sure. But I would assume most teams you're going to talk to, they're only going to have one this year and one next year.
Okay. And secondly, you made the comment of, you know, obviously he was on, Jalen's on his rookie deal. It's going to be, you know, he's going to get paid. He's going to get his money. But with that precedent, can an argument be made that part of the reason that they were willing to give up that much is, assuming he resigns, you're looking at a corner you're at least going to probably have under on that team for another decade. Like, he's still got a long ways to go. Whereas, and I'm not trying to talk down Slay. Slay is, in my opinion, one of the top three or four corners in the league when he's playing great. But Slay is also not Jalen Ramsey's age. He's older, so nope. You're not getting as much out of it. So I feel like that is a great precedent, but I feel like any team's going to look at you and go, okay, I see where you're going. Go a little lower. What you're asking for, we need you to go a little lower.
And that's fair, and that's exactly how I imagine the negotiations would work. If it ends up being like a first and a second, a first, a third, and a young piece, I think that's more realistic. But I'm going in starting to ask for those two firsts.
Okay. And then,
you make a really good point about, Ramsey's younger and you have the chance to have him in his prime for much longer. Yeah.
And then that was the other thing I was going to tie into it is you touched on basically what I would want. But the one thing you didn't mention, but you did just mention right now is if I'm trading him, one, I 100% agree. It has to be by the draft. We need to know by the clock starting on Cincinnati, if Darius Slay is going to be a Detroit Lion or if he's going to be one of the other on one of the other teams. But the other thing is, in my opinion, with what we've done in the secondary, trading away players, drafting young, Coleman and Slay are our two veterans right now. If you want to trade Darius Slay, I'm all about it. I get that in order to get the picks, whatever you get in the way of a body isn't necessarily going to be comparable, but I personally think there has to be a body coming back the other way. Someone who, if nothing else, is a veteran, at least has some experience in this league that we can say, all right, you're the number two corner, you're our starting safety just for now. So we have veteran presence on this team while these young guys get a little bit more experience. That way we're not throwing these guys to the wolves year one or year two and saying sink or swim, because we can't afford that right now. So I think no matter what you get in the way of draft picks, there has to be a body coming back the other way that you know you can put on that field week one. And I'm not saying they're going to be Darius Slay or Jalen Ramsey, but they need to at least be comparable or comfortable playing out there, and you know that they're not a liability. We can't afford to give away a lot and not have anything in the way of a body on the field that we can feel comfortable playing.
I agree. You're just opening more holes up.
So it's an interesting conversation. Jay, I can't believe you wouldn't even entertain the idea of trading him. I've never seen you stick to your guns with loyalty of a Detroit athlete like that.
I just don't trust us grabbing draft picks and actually turning them into superstars, because we've never done it.
Okay.
So
that's fine.
I get what you know, especially for the Detroit Lions.
Absolutely. Ross, my props to you, man. I threw you kind of into the deep end, and you made something out of it, and I liked it. Now let's actually talk about trades that we have actually happened and we know something about. This is where I hand the reins over to Russ. We're going to talk NHL trade deadline, and then once we get done with that, we'll hit you with our games of the week and plays of the week from this for this week. It should be a good time. But Russ, hand the mic over to you now, man.
All right. Well, I guess the first observation is NHL trade deadline came and went. I went to look at my Red Wings jersey in my closet, and it had become an Edmonton Oilers jersey. So, sorry, guys. I guess I got traded too.
Oh, that's
it seems
bad.
Like everyone else did. it's Stevie hooking up with Holland. Two different trades. One because apparently he hates us sleeping. Right? We have to have the Steve Yzerman 1 a.m. special because 3 hours post game. That's the sweet spot for a pick. Good job.
Yeah.
But of course, Mike Green going for a bunch of cash, Kyle Brodziak, who's on long-term IR, for a conditional fourth, could be a third if they make the conference finals. And you know what helps them possibly do that? Also getting Andreas Athanasiou.
Yep.
A nice little slick move to possibly sweeten his previous deal by just doubling down and loading up Edmonton. But 2 seconds and Gagne.
a right-handed shot because we've forgotten what a right-handed shot on Detroit at forward is. he literally probably the most effective power play right-hander we have as far as a forward now, which is, yeah, we can just let that sit as it is. But I want to start the discussion with, was 2 seconds and the former power play specialty corpse that is Sam Gagne, is that enough for a, albeit down year, having 30-goal scorer who has all the speed in the world and already has 2 highlights on Edmonton? Jay, was 2 seconds enough, really, to give up the future that we could have got with Andreas Athanasiou?
I'm really mad that Columbus gave away so much draft capital last deadline, because there's a lot of talks with us working with them, and we ended up going with Edmonton ultimately. Maybe if Columbus had more picks, we would have gotten more. The 2 is fine. Sam Gagne doesn't do anything for me, just like Brodziak doesn't. I mean, those names will be off the roster and the payroll soon enough. I guess I can live with it. I mean, if that's what we're getting, and Ken Holland knows what he's getting in a player, I mean, everyone kind of got some assurances. Everyone, obviously, all week long, or for the past couple of days, have been talking about, you know, Yzerman found Kucherov in the second round. Okay, that's great. Mm-hmm. There's not that many Kucherovs or Datsyuks or Zetterbergs in deep rounds, but again, you know what you know. Holland got double A because he knows it. I know that Yzerman's done that before. So giving him more tools to possibly do it again, hey, maybe we come out ahead. But it's going to be some time until we see that. So I'm okay with it.
Okay, well, tossing it over to Eric, kind of touching on what Justin just said about finding Kucherov in the second round. We also have Point and Cirelli to add to the Kucherov second-round bounty that Yzerman has drafted before. Does that soften the blow for you at all that, hey, he has a proven track record of finding first-round talent in the second round?
I feel a little more comfortable with it. Listen, the thing for me that kind of makes me comfortable with it, I don't need to see Yzerman's track record. Steve Yzerman's awake and actually functioning in a trade deadline, and therefore that's something for me. That's more improvement than we've had in the last decade. Circling back to your original question of, I think it's more than enough for Athanasiou, because, yes, is Athanasiou capable of playing that way and playing to a high level? Absolutely. One, so, like, the team he's on, he's probably going to have a harder time doing it. But at the same time, I've seen enough out of Athanasiou to know that this guy plays when he wants to play. He's not necessarily a guy that's like, I'm on the Red Wings, I'm committed, let's go, 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 go. The guy left to go play overseas because he wanted something he wasn't going to get. I like Athanasiou to an extent, but I think that getting what we got is more than enough, because it at least is an opportunity to move on and improve, and maybe, like you guys said, find someone in that second round that might be a little more of a hidden gem.
So to peel back the curtain on that one a little bit, that was the same guy down talking after to see you who picked him up in fantasy hockey shortly after the trade.
I have Connor McDavid. That's move. The only reason I picked that man up. I did not pick him up for any other reason than I have Connor McDavid on my team.
Hey, it was a shrewd move, and if you didn't do it, I was going to. Uh-huh. I'm trying to give you your due justice
on
that one.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it was good. I think overall, hey, Yzerman did good. Does the addition of Dmytro Timoshov help anything? Well, it makes Toronto a little more miserable, right? And who doesn't enjoy that? So, to talk about the rest of the trade deadline, let's dump on Toronto for a little bit here.
Sounds good.
Yes. So the only thing that they did of consequence, really, was picking up a fifth-round pick for laundering the salary of Robin Leonard. So for a brief second, they finally had, you know, their backup goalie situation solved. But they also got to see former Leaf Patrick Marleau traded for an asset. Mm-hmm. Didn't they? What was that? 249 days ago now, they traded him away and gave a first round pick away from him. So he went from a negative asset, well, huge negative asset, to a positive one to Pittsburgh. Toronto. then before we jump back into this, talk about moves you wish you could have made. Oh, Jake Muzzin goes down the day after the trade deadline. They don't get to address their defensive depth at
all, really. They brought Cal Rosen back in a minor move, but that's a guy they threw away in the Kadri deal. So it's all looking down for Toronto, losing to a Zamboni driver aside. I guess I want to jump back to you guys. We'll start with Justin and bring you guys back in. We talk about Toronto not making moves. So was there a move at the trade deadline that you wish you would have seen that ultimately fell through? And also, here's the floor. Shit on Toronto, if you'd like.
So here I thought leaves only fell in the fall. They also fall in the winter as well. no, screw Toronto. The thing I was shocked about the most was Chris Kreider. For a team that was very vocal to its fans that they're rebuilding, stick with us, come buy jerseys and beer. They did it the right way, by the way. Holding on to Lundqvist, he wasn't going to go anywhere. They traded off a bunch of people last year. Chris Kreider said, nope, I am a part of the Big Apple. I think that's huge for players to buy in. Not that they need a reason to go play in New York, but for a guy to be like, yeah, I'm not the bread man. I'm not King Henrik. I'm a part of this team. I want to be a part of this team. Extend me and I'll stay. And that's what they did for him. I love that. As much as I, trust me, I wanted to see him move because he was the biggest name on the board. He stayed with the team and he's creating that movement to make New York a better team again. And I love watching that for some reason. They're like my adopted kid. I like the Rangers. So that was my one move that I wish it would have happened, but I'm kind of happy it didn't.
Oh, and to cover both of our points again, the Rangers get a little bit better in the future, picking up a conditional first from Carolina for Brady Shea, which was only possible because Carolina got that first-round pick from the Toronto Maple Leafs for Patrick Marleau. Good job, Toronto.
They suck. But, they're so bad.
Right? It always comes back. So we'll throw it over to Eric. Move you wish you would have seen non sequitur. Glendening still on this team. What?
No,
was that the move?
I have the move. If you listen to this show, I'm consistent in one part of this show. The move I would have loved to have seen, and I think it's one that we could still make if we do a little bit of maneuvering, I would like to see Danny DeKeyser traded for a food voucher to a local strip club because that's about what he's worth to me, and I think it would be enjoyable for one of us to enjoy that. I would have liked to have seen, if possible, a guy like that, someone who I still a player on our team who maybe is a little more dead weight than he is contributing, at least for something. Didn't have to be anything major, but at least something that kind of stacks the cupboard up, gives us a little more reserve to go after in the draft or free agency. As for throughout the NHL, no, not really. I secretly texted you guys this. Secretly, I always hope that we're going to see one, like, big boom trade that, like, no one saw coming. A guy who was key in a locker room being shipped somewhere else. And as I went through it the other day, I just didn't see that. And I think, to me, as a kind of not as knowledgeable hockey fan, not necessarily seeing where all the X's and O's fit perfectly, I would have liked to have seen that. Someone, a big name, big ticket item, seeing someone get moved to another locker room and it just being like the didn't see that coming. That would have been enjoyable, but for the most part, no. I think I saw what I wanted to see. There wasn't really anything major for me. I'm interested to see Marleau in Pittsburgh. It could be interesting.
Yeah, it will be very, very interesting to watch him there. But you make a really good point. There wasn't really a lot of star power there. We had some rumors that Parise might be getting moved.
Yeah,
which would have been super interesting. I believe it was the Islanders that were linked to him. But I guess we did have some decent trades, lacking star power. I will grant you that. But to throw it back to Justin, kind of your favorite move that actually was consummated on the trade deadline. Be it a team, you want to jump with a whole team, or if they're just one move in particular, I know a lot of teams only made the one move, but what actually tickled your fancy in a star-studded trade deadline that wasn't?
Yeah, I got a couple, actually. Sticking with the theme, I love that Martinez went to Vegas because he couldn't go to Toronto, and they needed defense. So, ha-ha, Toronto. Connor Sheary, and Russ, you know this because you just picked him up in fantasy, but Connor Sheary heading over to Pittsburgh, jumping on that first line, left wing in Crosby, and then he's got Zucker, who they also traded for on the right-hand side. They just built their first line, kind of like Edmonton rolled out last night with Tyler Ennis and Double A. So I kind of, they're not big names, but I like seeing both Edmonton and Pittsburgh, like, yeah, we're kind of building on the fly, and we're going to make a run at the playoffs, and oh yeah, we're going to insulate the talent that we have. Connor Sheary is no rookie to Pittsburgh, and I forgot how many points he put up with them before, but he'll probably do it again, and when they take their run for the playoffs. So just some minor moves making stars have more talent around them.
Mm-hmm. No, that was actually not me that picked him up. That was Luke. I know we have similar team names, or both of our pictures are of a dog, so it's an understandable mistake. But anyone with that much Buffalo stink on him, I'm going to have a hard time. I still have Jack Eichel. Never mind. You know, sometimes Buffalo's okay. For me, Carolina. I loved what Carolina did. I thought they got Vincent Trocheck for spare parts, which is awesome, and being able to rub the first-round pick that they basically got for free in Toronto's face and pick up a defenseman that should help them because their blue line is just bruised and battered and beaten right now. That's going to be an interesting team the rest of the way, and they're getting aggressive for a team that has stockpiled picks year after year, drafted well, developed well. They've been super aggressive this last calendar year in all of their trades. And now's the time. Now's the time, and maybe Svechnikov can fight Ovi and not get absolutely brutalized this time. Who knows? It'll be a coming-of-age story for everybody. But over to Eric.
Are you taking the Canes seriously though this year?
I am taking the Canes very seriously this year. I love the way they've built their team. The only thing stopping them right now is they have a terrible record against the Metro, which happens to be the division they're in, which sucks for them. But they have a phenomenal record against any other division. If they can just get past the first round, get out of their own division, which is easily, by my estimation, the best in the league, then they've got a real shot. They might need a Zamboni driver, though, and that's really... That's really their biggest issue, and if I had to knock them for anything, it's that they didn't make any moves for a goaltender. Robin Lehner would have looked a lot better there. Not that Vegas doesn't need him, because giving Flower a break is highly advised, just because he's getting up there in age and can still play but needs the rest. But yeah, if their goalies can get hot, if Peter Mrazek can win one series, that's a team that can make a lot of moves. But not to delay bringing him in anymore. Eric, tell us something nice. Talk nice about the trade deadline.
I got one. I scrolled through. I wanted to make sure I found the right one.
Yep.
It ties in with a lot of us. Russ, this was your baby boy for a while in fantasy hockey. You loved him. He's maybe not the player he once was, but he went to a team that I think has some serious young talent that I think if they can keep acquiring the talent and keep making a few moves here and there, in a couple years, all of a sudden they're going to appear on the map and be really well. And that is, it's probably not a big highlight trade. I know it got mentioned in our group, but that would be about it just because of who this guy is. Mine is Wayne Simmonds going to Buffalo for a fifth-round pick. I like Buffalo, so to see a guy I like watching go to that team, That's good with me. It just gives me more reasons to try to find Buffalo highlights.
Does it taint it at all knowing that Wayne Simmonds is a free agent after this year?
Hurts a little bit, but you know what? I think at the same time, I mean, if this team shows improvement, if you're Wayne Simmonds, why wouldn't you look at it and go, I got all this young talent around me that are really good. Mm-hmm. It's not pressure on me to have to be the guy. Not that he's really ever been the guy anywhere, but he's had to contribute more in other spots. That he can be surrounded with that talent. They're going to set him up, and he's also going to have that veteran presence to kind of guide him in the right direction. I think it's a win-win thing for him. I mean, unless he really wants to take a low contract on a contender, why not? This is a team that they've got some young talent. They could really be effective. A few more people, obviously, I'm not sitting here saying, oh, Buffalo, look for Buffalo, they're going to win it all. They're a little ways away from that, but they're still, I would argue they've got some really good young talent that, why wouldn't you want to stick around, Wayne, if it's a good deal that's worth it to you? Why not?
Yeah, plus they
he probably saw that they gave Jeff Skinner 7 years at $9 million per, so he said, yeah, let me get some of that sweet, sweet Pegula money.
Why not? I mean, yeah. it's I don't know why he wouldn't, but it was just for that. It's for the fact that Wayne Simmons has kind of been a little bit of a cult favorite in our group. I think we've all had him at some point or another. He's a player you know, player you like. It was fun to watch. Going to a team that, I think, are a couple moves and a couple years away, but they're also, to me, making moves that are trending them in the right direction. They're not moving laterally. They're actually, you see them in the draft or in free agency going, here's a piece, here's a piece, here's a piece. So before you know it, they're going to all of a sudden be, well, here's the team. They're actually really, you know, making runs for it. Now they're, you know, that's a couple years away, but it's still not going to be too bad to watch in the interim.
No, you make a good point. And if nothing else in Buffalo, those fans deserve some kind of a fun product to watch.
Absolutely. Why not?
And that helps it a little bit more because they are, this is what happens if the rebuild hits a couple hiccups in Detroit. So watch a little scared, Detroit fans.
Yeah.
That could be how it goes wrong, even though hitting on a couple picks. It's a scary version of what the future might be. But speaking of the future that might be, last topic on the trade deadline, just wanted to cover quickly how it sets up the Wings for the draft. Now they have 6 picks in the first 3 rounds, including 3 in the second round, which, hey, we covered Iserman's track record there. Looks like it could be really good. But a problem that I wanted to bring up is Ottawa. Is Ottawa somehow finagling their way into having 3 first-round picks, including a combined better chance to have the top overall pick than Detroit right now, despite having the 3rd and 4th best odds at getting it. They have 11.5-point chance at the top overall pick in one, 9.5 on the other from San Jose, because, wow, have they hit the shitter. Detroit only 18.5. So devil's advocate here, or deal with the devil, rather. Detroit could fall as far as 4. Would you guarantee that they get 2, but Ottawa, one of their picks lands at 1, knowing that they're in your division? Is that a move you're willing to make, or are you going to risk that Detroit might fall down to 4, of which they have a 50.6% chance? I've been going to Jay constantly.
The league hasn't made Ottawa an AHL team yet?
No.
I could have swore they were a minor league hockey team by now. I did not know
they were
still here. I would assume with how that team's been managed that at some point they went, oh, good, we're part of the South Farmington Recreational League. It's just, it's so bad. Okay. No, I would, see, that's the thing. Like, everything Russ just said, I comprehended, and about half of it went right out the other side to the point where I'm like, no, I obviously want to get as high a pick as possible, but I don't know. See, that's the thing, and my knowledge is limited in hockey, but I feel like from 2 to 4, are you really risking the talent drop off that much?
In this draft, the consensus is no.
Okay.
About 2 to 5, it's pretty similar to your flavor. Quentin Byfield is most of the time expected to be the second pick.
Okay.
But he's a little younger, a little more raw.
Okay.
But it's kind of 1, and then 2 through 5, and then 6 through 9.
See, then the way you frame that, no, I wouldn't be too concerned with it. I mean, unless I know, like, the number one pick is attainable, like very, 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 very attainable, I don't know that I'd be too upset if it's from 2 to 4, because, like you just said, the talent doesn't drop off, so really it's just, it's seeing who's there and adjusting your preference for if that person fills a need for you, I guess would be the way to say it. So, yeah, no, I don't think I'd be as upset about it, but at the same time, I you know, you want to get as high a pick as you can get. I get that.
Right. Okay, Jay. Are you making the deal with the devil, or are you like Eric and you're not afraid of taking the risk for the big payoff?
Okay, run the scenario by me one more time.
Okay. Detroit, currently best overall chance at the number one overall pick. Ottawa, third and fourth best. Cumulative, they have a better chance of getting the top overall pick than Detroit. Would you
guarantee that Detroit gets the number two pick, knowing that there's a 35% chance that they get either one or two, and a 50.6% chance that they get four. Would you guarantee the Wings get the second overall pick, but know that the number one overall pick has to go in your division to Ottawa?
Man, I mean, Ottawa can mismanage so many things wrong. At least he's going. Like, I love the little French kid that you called him, which is, by the way, his new name. They would mismanage him. I feel a little bit comfortable that he would go to Ottawa. I mean, Ottawa's got picks for days in this draft, so I would be fine with it. But I want to win the lottery, baby. Can one team in this godforsaken city win the lottery? Give me Lafreniere.
All right, so we got two guys taking the risk. I'm going to make it three. The payoff of even that less than a quarter percent, less of a quarter chance that you get him, is worth it for the drop-off there. Could Quentin Byfield be the next Evgeny Malkin? Yeah, there's a chance. But Tim Stützle at four might be really good too. But I'm even more sure that Lafreniere is going to be better than them. So, yeah, I'm going to take... I'm not going to take the deal. Johnny can go play his fiddle somewhere else. I guess we're waiting for the lottery, boys.
Absolutely.
And that's all we've got for the trade deadline. To toss it back over to Eric to take us home.
All right. Well, that's not all we have for the trade deadline. We got one last one.
No.
I'm going to put you guys. It's nothing too difficult. I wanted to let Russ have his momentum. I didn't want to take anything from you and get you off the path. I'll let you go first, Russ. Actually, since you carried the conversation. I'm going to ask you, we did this, it's a little weird circumstance. We did this with the Lions at the end of the year. I'm going to ask you to do it with the Red Wings in the middle of the year. I want you to give me that report card grade on how Yzerman did in this trade deadline.
I'd give him a B.
Okay.
He did moves that he needed to do. He pulled the trigger on AA, which was, it was being more and more telegraphed that he was not a part of the core in Yzerman's eyes. So it made sense to get what you could for him before what was likely to be a difficult contract negotiation this summer.
Mm-hmm.
A little underwhelmed with the return, but it's fair.
Okay.
So a B, hey, it's a good grade. He didn't knock my socks off. Daly's still on the roster. That's good.
No, that's fine. That's about where I was going to put him. I think I might have hit him with a B minus just to, like I said, I would have liked to have seen one more thing that maybe just kind of pushed it over the edge. But, you addressed two areas that were things that we wanted to address. We talked about multiple times. Jay, over to you. What's the grade you're giving Yzerman?
So I'm just going to do a quick little recap here because I will tell you what he had. When he traded Green, he had a C in my mind because retaining half the salary and having an ugly condition on the fourth, it didn't make sense at the time, right? Edmonton adding AA and Tyler Ennis went from that grade up to at least a B, maybe even a B+, because Edmonton's chances, advancing in the playoffs went up. And I'm not mad at the return, and I kind of got over the conditional part, which just seems like a Kenny Holland special. It was actually pretty fair, so he landed on a B+ for me.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
So he had to go get that extra credit, though.
Yeah, we're all in pretty much the same realm. There was more that could have been done, but at the same time, you didn't lose the draft or the trade deadline. You made enough of a move that we see efforts made. So I agree with that, and that's more than fair. That's more than fair. All right, well, we're gonna have more about hockey to talk about over the next couple weeks. Getting a little bit closer to the end of the year, and. Try to stick with it. I mean, these Red Wings are rough, but we're going to do our best for them. Moving on, this week we got play of the week and game of the week. Last week you saw the pattern of basketball. This week we stuck with the pattern. We just chose a different sport. So I'm going to let Jay go first here. Jay, why don't you go ahead and give us your play of the week and then give me your game of the week.
All right, play of the week.
Okay.
Apparently, I'm going back to back on my own issues of being vertically challenged. But Nathan Gerbe, he is an astonishing 5'4", which is actually how tall I am. He fought a dude named Sanheim, who is 6'4". He first led into the play by leaving his feet and hitting Claude Giroux. Stopped the play, initiated a fight, got into a fight, ended up being the guy on top, which, like, when you're having a wrestling match on skates, that's like your pride moment when you're the dude on top. Nathan Gerbe, let me remind you, is 5'4". And he had an impactful play for one of the shorter people in the league. So I got to give credit to my short people out there.
That was Jay's play of the week. Sound a little something like this.
In the corner, Couturier. Oh, Gerbe with a massive hit on Claude Giroux. And now a fight. Yeah, but Giroux went back and said, leave it alone. As Sanheim jumped in on Gerbe. Gerbe gets the takedown. Two big plays. You hit the captain, Claude Giroux. Hit the crowd with the oohs and ahs right there. Giroux comes back to Sanheim, says, leave it. Gerbe drops the gloves first, so there should not be an instigator. Good old-fashioned wrestling match right there.
Yeah, that was a fun one to get the audio on, Jay. That was definitely a cool play to watch. And always fun watching a little guy scrap. Nothing wrong with that. Now hit us with the game of the week.
Game of the week, I'm looking no farther than this evening. You've got the Oilers and the Las Vegas Knights playing each other. I liked what both teams did at the trade deadline. It's going to be a great game to see between the new defensive pieces that Vegas got and obviously that top line for Edmonton. So I have the ability to do so now, but I am totally watching that game tonight. Staying up way too late past my bedtime.
All right, nothing wrong with that. Russ, leading over to you, man. Hit us with that play of the week and then that game of the week.
So my play of the week, I get to jump on Toronto one more time. It is, of course, one Mr. David Ayers. No, Toronto, you didn't just lose to a 42-year-old backup goalie or emergency goalie. You didn't just lose to a 42-year-old emergency goalie who is a kidney transplant recipient. You didn't just lose to a 42-year-old kidney transplant emergency goalie who is in your own organization and is on the payroll, but also he got a shot on net, and that is my play of the week. We've had, I believe it's 12 different goalies score a goal in the NHL. I don't know how many have actually had a shot and not score. So this guy's just making history left and right. It was just the height of absurdity, and I absolutely loved it. Shot on goal by the emergency backup goalie. How about that?
How about that indeed? Here's Russ's play of the week, and also great story of the week. It sounded a little something like this.
We have word that Dave Ayers, 42 years of age, emergency support goaltender, will be forced into service here for the Hurricanes. And here he comes, number 90 for the Carolina Hurricanes is Dave Ayers. Self pass, he'll get after it. Ayers out to play it. He'll move it. Good job to a safe area.
Yeah, that'll settle him down, you hope. Nice little play to reverse that puck.
And Reinsdyke along the boards. Tavares centering pass. A chance. Ayers said no. It's loose in the crease. He's got it. 3 seconds left. Here's Clifford. Stopped by David Ayers. The Carolina Hurricanes surround him and defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs 6-3.
All right, Russ. That was your play of the week. It was a great one. Now hit me with that game of the week.
All right, game of the week. I also let the trade deadline influence my choice, same as Justin did. I've got Friday night, Colorado goes to Carolina. Yes, I'm high on Carolina. Here we are again. Speculation was they'd get a goalie. They didn't. We'll see. That's going to be very interesting how that plays out. Colorado's a lot of fun. Didn't make a lot of moves. But this is two playoff-bound teams on a Friday night game. Hey, go out to the bar. Make sure they have it on the TV. It should be a lot of fun to watch.
All right, absolutely. All right, now, I'm going to stick with you guys for the play of the week trend, but I actually have to break away on game of the week. So my play of the week was one that you could almost put it on as play of the year. It wasn't a great play. The significance behind it is what made it it made it so great. And that is the fact that we just talked about this guy a couple weeks ago, had the debate on where he stood in the all-time pantheon of this game. And the other night, he decided he took that one more step further that solidifies him as one of the best to do it, and that was the fact that Alexander Ovechkin hit 700 career goals. Something we, according to what the announcer said on the clip I got, only eight people have ever done. So when you're in that rarefied of air, you know you did something that very, very few other people were capable of doing. And it sounded a little something like this.
Alex opens up. Kuznetsov further to the front. Deflection stop. Great stuff there. Blackwood robbed Wilson. Ovechkin put it right on a platter for him. Kuznetsov for Ovechkin. Drive. He scores. His spectacular history making continues. 700 red lights.
He has just joined an exclusive club, and there's all of eight, which matches his number for the Washington Capitals. His group is second to none. We may never see another 700 goal scorer. He has just done it.
I mean, I know I got a game of the week to talk about, guys, but come on, Ovi going for 700 is just amazing, especially after talking about him a couple weeks ago. It's just that awesome.
Absolutely.
Of a play.
No, it was. If there wasn't, you know, a 42-year-old emergency backup goalie, I would have been incredibly jealous that you picked that one over me.
Absolutely. Now for my game of the week. My game of the week is happening on Sunday, but it also happened last night. The New Orleans Pelicans and Zion Williamson played the L.A. Lakers and LeBron James, their first time facing off against each other since Zion came into the league. Neither disappointed. Zion went for 29-6. LeBron showed why he's LeBron and went for 40 points. They're playing again on Sunday against each other, and I didn't get a chance to see all of this one. You better believe I am telling everyone to get the hell away from me, and I'm sitting right in front of that TV, and I'm going to watch the best player in the league right now, or one of the best players in the league right now, go up against one of the bright stars, young talent of the league. I want to see these two go head-to-head. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Zion is one of only four guys to ever score 25 points five games in a row as a rookie teenager. So, again, someone who's in rarefied air, and I want to see him keep going. That will be my game of the week. Zion and the Pelicans against LeBron James and the LA Lakers should be fun to watch. Justin, that's basketball, just so you know.
Oh, yeah. My God, I forgot about that sport.
Yeah, there's that sport, yeah. So that's what that was. Just wanted to make sure you were understanding of it, that's all. All right, well, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. As always, a pleasure to do this. Wouldn't want to do it with two better people. These guys are the best at what they do. Russ Ivanek, you're the stat man that makes us sound infinitely smarter than we really are. You proved that when you had to explain to Jay and I a question twice about the trade and the fact that I didn't know Ottawa wasn't a minor league team.
You know what? It's fair to not know that about Ottawa, because really they treat themselves as the feeder system for the rest of the league. 3 years after being a single goal in double overtime away from making the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yep.
So yeah, good job, Ottawa.
Well, we always appreciate it, buddy. You're the best.
Oh, it's a pleasure being here, man.
And Jay Marcus, man, no one I'd rather do the show with. You're the commissioner of my league anytime you want to be. You're shrewd businessman. Only person I know who wouldn't at least take the calls to talk about trading Darius Slay. But hey, I love it. Wouldn't have you any other way, buddy.
Hey, if I was a commissioner, I would just chuck my phone into a lake and hope for the best for my fandom.
Okay, well, I'm going to rethink that whole you being our commissioner. I just want
call.
You to know. Yeah, just good call. And as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.